Welcome to the Psychologym Podcast, a platform where we discuss the mental, physical, and emotional health of your world. Welcome to where mind meets body, with your host, Kristen McAdams.
Welcome to the Psychologym Podcast, y'all. I'm your host, Kristen McAdams. Move away from manipulation step into some self-awareness. We have an awesome topic for you today. Before we get started, the usual disclaimer right at the top. This is not to be mistaken for professional advice. If you need to see a medical professional, please do so. You can dial 988, Suicide Prevention Hotline, text 741-741, text HOME to that number to get some assistance immediately. And we also have some resources dropped at the end of the episode and in the episode description. Also, if you're a client and you hear something that you don't like, you please bring it up in session. Otherwise, feel free to ask for referrals. I am a big advocate for therapeutic fit. And if there is something that is irreconcilable for you, I completely understand that and we can work that out. That being said, let's get on to the good stuff. I'm in studio today with Ashley Carman. She is the owner and founder and magician behind Altered Psychedelics. This is a practitioner training company and community of support for people that are practitioners, therapists that are interested in learning about psychedelics and working with psychedelics in their practice. She has a lot of amazing things. Ashley, I'll let you talk in more detail about what it is you do.
Thank you. Hello. Yeah. Hi. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, excited to be here.
Tell us a little bit more about Altered Practitioners.
Altered Psychedelic Practitioners, APP, is a professional association, a community of active psychedelic practitioners of all kinds. Emphasis on the diversity of our group. What we do essentially in the association, our meat and potatoes, if you will, is consultation, which can be very clinical. But we're not only geared towards clinical professionals, we're geared towards all psychedelic professionals in the field. So
love it.
Energy healers, shamanic, more earth-based wisdom, ancestral practitioners, and your classical, you know, Western clinicians, psychiatrists, psychotherapists.
Such MDs. A divide. There's
I hate to describe it as polarized, but
it is.
There's a bit of a, on opposite ends of the spectrum here.
Yeah, it is. That's one of my biggest passions right now is I really am trying to emphasize combining fields, which is why I love what you do, because it does that. It provides a space for people to come together and talk about a common interest, right? And get consultation around a common
definitely
thing.
Emerging right now.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah, and I'm really wanting to bridge and create collaboration. I'd say, collaboration is definitely the goal.
Yeah, I think we need more of that in the world in general.
Yes, can we come together, collaborate, connect, explore, discuss like adults?
Yeah,
and not just sit on our opposite ends and yell at each other, point fingers.
Yeah, judge each other and sling names at each other. Right. And I think that's probably at the core of a lot of people's mental health challenges in general right now. Anyways, we were watching a documentary last night, actually, that side note, that reminded me of everything that we went through during COVID. And it was like all these news clips and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, we went through that. Like we really just went through that.
Talk about polarized.
Yeah.
Families, friends.
Right. And it's like, now we're all just like kind of sliding back into normal. Right. And it's not... it's not the same. Like it's changed.
It's not normal.
It's not.
We're not back to normal.
Right.
Whatever that is. I don't think we'll ever be back to whatever that was pre-COVID, but that's, and as it is, how could you go back to the.
Yeah.
That's why it's called the new normal. Come on now.
Yeah. Get with the programming. But and it's interesting because it's like things like psychedelics have been like diverted back into the abnormal or the alternative, right? Like they use terms like alternative to talk about.
Yeah, they're othered in some ways, yet there's so much history and, you know, civilizations for millennia, thousands of years. Thousands of years have been used, but that's the alternative. That's not the norm. What we do now is the norm. Yeah, and it, why? That's where my mind goes. Why? Why is that? Is there something else there? Is there an agenda? Is something else happening? Why?
Yep.
Why does that exist?
That's why I knew when I met you, I was like, we're going to connect because I'm that person too. I'm always like, yeah, but why?
Right. Like, why?
I want to be an 8-year-old. Tell me why.
Yeah, it's this a really great question. I actually, I'm working with a client right now and he loves to bring his son up in session and his son is the teacher because his son's always like, why? And then his dad, he'll go, but well, why did you ask why? And he's like, why? Yeah. It's just always why, just why.
And then you're like challenged immediately in that moment to be
very
like,
good therapeutic skill too, right? Mm-hmm. Like unpack.
Mm-hmm. It made me think of when I was getting ready for the show today. Like I tend to keep things pretty casual. I usually have on like some black t-shirt and a hat.
Love the hat. Random.
Yeah. Some friends of mine got this for me because I was over it. Like yeah. People were just like,
you just skip that whole thing in the beginning.
Yeah. I'm just read my hat.
Yeah. The answer is keep yes. Talking. I already know what you're going to ask. Here's your answer.
I can't not diagnose you. It's how I think as a human. It's literally the basis of the foundation right. Of how I think about the world. So yeah, I'm probably diagnosing you. Oddly enough.
For free. You're welcome.
You're welcome. Yeah. I oddly like, and it's so funny because people think of mental health as like being diagnostic, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't diagnose in my practice. So I think this hat's even funnier.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, I don't.
I don't either. And clients actually really sometimes when I had my talk therapy practice, I've actually closed that down. April of this
good
year.
Good for you.
Yeah, which is big because it took so much to build that and create that and go into that and get comfortable with that and then to make that successful and to find my groove with that. And then right when I found my groove, I'm like, okay, I think I'm complete. I think I'll close it down now and shift totally into psychedelics. But in that talk therapy practice, a lot of clients wanted a diagnosis. Like they would ask me for a diagnosis. I'm like, hey, I'm not coming to you with a diagnosis. Yes. Why are you coming to me wanting or needing a diagnosis?
You're like, you need a therapist.
You're right. She could talk to somebody about that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I find that a lot. And I think that has a lot to do with the social construct around mental health, right? There's so much time we spent trying to lift the stigma, and now lifting the stigma means making room for diagnoses, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this messaging out there that like as a human you're broken, you're flawed, something's wrong with you, you need to like take some sort of, you know, antidepressant, or you need to take a Xanax to calm down. Like we're always trying to like put ourselves in some sort of like box that
to be
it's not human
good enough. I mean there's just like the medical model that's what it's built on. Like you're not going to get your therapy paid for, you're not going to get your prescriptions at all if you don't have this billing code, which is like emphasis on billing code. That's where I think most of this came from, is it's a billing code and justification for medical necessity. It's an insurance ploy.
Which is guised in like standard of care. It's guised in like, oh, we have these standards to keep you safe, but I think it's just making people sicker.
Yeah, well, there is a box that happens. It's a bit of a trap, and I make space for all of it because the client's experience is what matters. It doesn't matter my opinion or what I think, and I leave space for that. And so it can be very validating to be like, oh, other people have what I have and suffer from borderline personality disorder or panic attacks, and it's not just me, and it's, you know, I'm not the odd person or the weirdo here. Like, the rest of other people in society have this too. So there is a bit of, like, validation that is therapeutic in a sense, but then we're labeling ourselves. Now we're identifying as this diagnosis, and where does that, is there a ceiling? Like, where does that end? Does that mean for lifelong?
Yeah.
How do we experience that? I very much try and shift clients out of it. And I let them know also, I don't work from a diagnostic perspective. This is your human experience. And personally, I believe we're all on the spectrum of these diagnoses to a certain degree. We all experience these things, a little bit of maybe narcissism or depression or anxiety or you know, relationships can become exaggerated or valued indeed
because like we're humans with brains and we're it's complicated plants.
You want to put us on paper and make it black and white, it just doesn't work that way.
But yeah, nope, it only works that way for a regulated system,
for insurance
purposes. Insurance, yep, that fucking insurance and bane of my existence. I it's interesting though, you talk about that, that sense of community, like that, like, oh, I see this in other people struggle with this, and it's not just me. Like, I feel like that's the buy-in to expanding your perspective. It's the buy-in to, like, it doesn't really matter, like, how you enter that type of processing. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes the way to enter is like, oh, mental health is a thing. It's important for me to take care of my mental health.
Yeah.
I saw on TikTok that I match these diagnoses.
Right. I have ADD.
Yep. I have ADD, I have autism, I have, Tourette's, I have...
TikTok.
Yeah.
I can appreciate the normalization of it. I appreciate that, you know, try and bring some silver lining or gratitude to it, that it's more common talk and commonplace. And yeah. I think there's, with social media, those generations, it's spread and it's just become normal and it's okay to talk about your feelings.
Yeah.
But like with anything, where's the harmony and balance in it? And... Yeah.
It's trying to find a way back to like connection in a way, right? Like the internet and everything and COVID and, you know, deterioration of families and neighborhoods and things like that has like drawn us into this isolation. And then you hear that repeated. That's part of the thing that we listened to last night too, is like, you hear on repeat, like, you're alone, you're lonely, you're alone, you're lonely, you're isolated, you're alone, you're lonely. And then people are like, I don't know how to find community. So then they go online, they go on TikTok and they say, I can relate.
Trans or queer or have borderline.
Must belong to this category.
Autistic. Yeah. Can I belong? And these are my people. Let me connect with them. I'll be accepted here because we're the same in that way.
Yeah. Yep. There are other ways. There are other ways. Well,
my thoughts exactly.
Yeah.
Me and Ashley just sighs. I
don't even know where to go. Yeah, there's so much. But it's a normal part of human behavior also.
It is. Yeah.
Like it's, you know, what do I need to do to stay a part of the tribe so that I can eat and have protection and have people helping me raise my children? Like, what do I do to stay tribal to make sure that I'm being accepted and not being rejected? Because rejection is... death could mean death.
And it's got to be so hard for people to wrestle with that these days. Like, just the whole emphasis on authenticity and individuality and hyper-independence as a coping strategy and all of these things, right? And, like, we're calling all the men narcissists. We're calling all the women BPD. And now everybody's, you know, has a free license to behave poorly and, like, identifying with their behaviors. And you're like, you're not your behaviors, right? Like, if you were to really face your fears and tolerate that discomfort and, like, take a breath and go, you know, embodiment, I think, which I was going to end with today, but we can start with it too. Like, I feel like that 80% of that embodiment coupled with like mental flexibility to a degree, right? You don't want to be so flexible that you have no structure mentally, right? But you don't want to be so rigid that you can't expand or evolve your mind or perspective. So I think those two components are really what people need, and the diagnosis and the labeling doesn't allow for that. It doesn't allow for embodiment.
It's rigid. It's fixed.
Yeah.
It's a criteria on under a diagnosis, and it's not there's no ebb and flow to it. It's just, this is what you are. It's black and white. It's fixed. Yeah. I was thinking about the masculine and the feminine and the rigidity of the masculine, which is so necessary for structure.
Yeah.
But also having the masculinity and the rigidity enough in harmony enough to allow for the fluidity and the flow of the feminine essence. And we all harbor those masculine feminine traits. And need both of them. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And need them in different contexts and different reasons. And I don't know, there's certain freedom in that too, to be able to embody both. But why don't we jump over to the threshold section? I want to talk about your experiences with starting APP and getting into the world of psychedelics.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, let's jump into the threshold.
Good job.
Yeah. Way to go.
Crack that code.
Solving problems between segments.
That's right.
Our producer's a champion over here.
Crushing.
Yeah. Feel free to jump in if you have any questions, too, about psychedelics, because I know that you don't have a lot of interest or experience.
I'm sure I'll get there at some point here.
Yeah. He's been curious. He just wants to know, you know.
Psychedelic curious.
Yeah. We're big proponents of that.
That's a group, too, isn't it?
Right?
It should be.
Where's your tag? Do you have a sticker? A hat for that, maybe?
You got some swag? Hashtag curious. I think I, you know, a lot of times doing this podcast, I'm always like nervous about if I say anything, right? And I think that's a common fear with therapists and practitioners, right?
Yeah, don't self-disclose. You're not human.
Yeah.
Black and white, tabula rasa.
Yeah, don't be a human. Don't be, you know, don't be a sexual being. Don't be a curious being.
Don't have any preferences. Don't have any opinions. Yeah. Don't like colors. Yeah. Don't wear your ring. You have to remain a blank slate.
You put up an awesome post about that the other day, talking about graduating, and you're like, I'm a therapist, right? Like, what about the people that I did help? Like, you're going to come at at me with this judgment about who I need to be as a therapist. And I just had so much respect and appreciation for
Thank you. I was lit. There was a lot of fire and passion behind that. And I saw this one small thing, which obviously had nothing to do with me, but it was the can opener to a whole can of worms of something that had been accumulating for a while. And it was just like, you know what? I'm just going to say something. I don't often take to social media to like air vent. But I do.
I love that shit.
I every once in a while I'll just be like, you know what? I just want everybody, the whole world, my whole 2,000 follower world. Yeah. I want everybody,
all 800
to know
of you,
how I feel about this. Okay, yeah. Listen, here.
Think about this. Chew on this. These are my thoughts. Right. I need you to hear them.
I matter.
No, I love that though, because I think that is a shared perspective among mental health practitioners. Not everybody, but I certainly had that. And being here and doing this podcast, like for the first 3 years, I was like, I can't say that. I have to be careful. And there's so much fear.
You know, you're being a good therapist, good little therapist. Yeah, you know, governing board's going to come in and spank you if you cross the line.
Not in my personality profile. That's not in my personality profile.
To comply
Rebel. Is not.
Nice.
It's not.
This is why we're here.
Yes. That's totally why we're here. That being said, like, growing up, and this is why I was like, I'm going to self-disclose, right? Like growing up, I did a lot of mushrooms growing up. I smoked a lot of weed. I did a lot of mushrooms. I don't do any of that as much these days, but back then I did a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the psychedelics actually, it was different back then, I feel like. It's so much more like branded now, or mm-hmm. like, I don't know, like the weed these days or marijuana these days, way different than it was when I, like, we had to like go to somebody's weird basement in Boston and, you know, pick seeds and stems out of stuff.
Yeah,
that's like a whole thing.
Crack open the Swisher Sweet to roll the blunt.
Yeah, like it was a whole process. It was a whole lifestyle, right? Yeah,
you got choices and options now.
It's so different now. It's wildly different now. But I really do think that introduction to psychedelics, like I was so passionate about lifting the stigma of mental health, like we talked about earlier, and like I was so passionate about like using these natural things as tools for experiencing a different way of having that mental flexibility, changing your mind, like just having a different experience, you know? And I did have different experiences, and it did feel so, and I'll talk about this a little bit in the research too, but it did feel like so mind opening at its core, just basically at its core.
Consciousness expansion.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So
I appreciate that. And I mean, I feel pretty comfortable being, open book, even as a therapist. I think it took me a while. I've been practicing for 7-8 years now. It took me a while to get to that point. It wasn't always like that, but it turns
like lifting weights.
If you want to develop a relationship with somebody, you have to give something.
Yep.
You have to reciprocate. And
such a good point.
And so I think that from where I'm sitting, I very much consider the relationship the vehicle of change. Mm-hmm. With clients. So anyways, I go into that tangent because I feel more comfortable these days being like, real. Oh yeah, I'm human too. Surprise, surprise. I'm not just a therapist. I'm human.
Yep.
And the self-disclosure actually helps the client. So I've embraced more of a self-disclosure when it's also
appropriate.
There's also guidelines around that and ways to do that.
Yeah.
But appropriately self-disclosing. So yes, I did drugs in high school and
I've done the drugs. Yes, I know what they do.
Experience the drugs. I put some things in my system. And you know, psychedelics weren't actually that common. I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area. For my generation, it was a lot of weed, which I did very much abuse. I'm actually kind of coming full circle with cannabis now. Because I've been invited to like cannabis ceremonies, and I was such a stoner in high school. Me and my best friend, our senior shirts were MYM, me, you, and Mary. And she was 4 and I was 20. And we would like smoke bongs, hit bongs on the way to school, like on the way to high school. And anyway, I was a stoner. Like I went deep with it. And so I feel like I've abused the plant, and I was a very abusive in that relationship. And so did that for, you know, high school through early 20s and then mid 20s was like, oh, I'm actually kind of uncomfortable when I smoke weed, very self-conscious and this is not fun anymore. And so stopped and am coming full circle now where it's like, okay, intention matters. And
yes,
I'm going to be intentional with my consumption of anything, not just substances or plants, but food or
beverages,
TV, social media, intentional about consumption because my body is my temple and I care about what I'm consuming on from all my sensory experiences. So Yeah, we'll hopefully come full circle with that.
That's what's so interesting, too, about, like, people that did have, like, it's so funny that you had an acronym, like, my friends all did, too. Uh-huh. We were like, oh, baby, like, the store, be eventually baked every day. Like, that was our motto. But, like, you look back now, and, like, we were so troubled. Like, and that is part of what I self-disclose is that, I struggle with depression. I struggle with anxiety and PTSD and all of these things throughout my life, but I've healed them all by doing exactly what you just said, right? Being intentional with how I treat my body and how I treat my mind and what I choose to consume and how I think about things. And I think that, you know, when you're a kid and like, especially in Boston, the drug scene in Boston is outrageous. Like the majority of the kids we went to high school with overdosed and died on heroin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's hardcore.
Very intense. So we were like the good kids in comparison to that.
It's pretty much like all of New England too.
It's not all of New England.
Especially when you get into like the northern states, like
opioids,
New Hampshire. Oh yeah, it's real bad. Wow. Like New Hampshire, even parts of Vermont. Like it's
for a lot of reasons. Yeah. A lot of we could do a whole other episode on that, but for a lot of reasons, it's very rampant up there, and it's. I don't know. It was at the core of why I started down the path that I did. My best friend overdosed and died on heroin addiction, and I was going to leave the field of psychology, and then that happened, and I was like, well, now I have to dedicate my entire life to this, and got a degree in substance addiction and all that, substance abuse studies. But
I spent a couple of years in working at a residential rehab.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole experience in and of itself. Yep. It's a whole revolving door of things, too. Like,
thank you for the work that you do.
Yeah, I mean, same. Cheers.
it's tough work, but I really appreciated all working with that population and being required, you know, I guess kind of coming back to the post a little bit.
Yeah.
Being required to have that experience, you know, needing 3,000 hours. I was an intern for... I spent 3 years at a residential rehab, government-funded program, 15 women living in one house, detoxing.
Yep.
Government-funded program means that working with homeless people, no resources, homelessness in the San Francisco Bay Area. I've got some people from the Tenderloin districts and some prostitutes from East Oakland, and I've got some gang members from Redwood City, and we're all, kumbaya-ing, detoxing off heroin.
We're all
on
doing
our methadone.
Music therapy. And
figuring out life together in one house. It was exactly what I needed.
Yeah.
It was exactly what I needed to learn some skills. Yep. To sit with people that have been through some heavy shit.
Yep. Yeah.
And to moderate myself and to regulate myself and to notice myself and to become aware of my thoughts and become aware of my feelings and become aware of my biases.
Totally.
And how do I employ interventions and how do I employ skills and what's right for the person and what matters and
what
all
the fuck
of the
am
things.
I doing?
Yeah. How the fuck do you work with humans?
Yeah.
Everybody's a little bit different and it requires a skill set. So yeah, you know, it's I'm very grateful for that time. And it taught me a lot about trauma, and 100% is a part of my tapestry and journey that brings me here to the space of psychedelics. And really respect the people that put in the work to, meet as outlandish or ridiculous or arbitrary as they may seem, to meet the criterias and get the qualifications to do the work. I mean, I take the psyche very personally. I take it very seriously. Try not to take it too seriously, you know, because we can always work with things, but it's spiritual, it's personal, like it's, you know, I don't take it lightly. I handle it delicately, no matter who's sitting across from me, and so there's a great deal of respect that I bring to that, and I question people that may poke and prod around in there because they have granted themselves the ability to do so.
Yeah, I hear a lot of really terrible things too from practitioners or like friends of friends or people that have shared, you know, those types of internship type experiences where there's the belief that you need to keep people sick so they keep coming back. And like, you don't need to be as effective, right? All you need to do is like validate and hold the space.
Job security?
Right. And it's like, but it's like that, right? Like they weren't doing what you were doing and sitting there in that space and saying, how do I work with these people? How do I make a change? How do I come up with a solution? Like, how do I embody this practice and come up with a way to actually help people? Mm-hmm. Right. Cause you look at the government funded programs or you look at like the rehab and the treatment centers and the revolving doors around those things. And it's like, you know, it's great for practitioner development and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's like, what would you say we're doing here? Yeah. What are the tools and resources and skills? And I think that that's why, you know, psychedelics is such an amazing cutting edge thing that we're doing now, which again, been around for thousands of years.
Yep.
Even the actor, like the research, the act of studying it has been around for decades. And we're only now just starting to, I mean, really scratch the surface, even though we have a lot of knowledge about it. So what brought you into it?
God brought me into it, is the short answer.
It's a great answer.
But, you know, I got into it personally and professionally at the same time. Mm-hmm. And my first introduction to psychedelics was actually in the sixth grade. Nice. With my cousin, who turns out didn't have such great ideas, but was a lot older than me, and thought that we should eat mushrooms on a pizza. And so we ate mushrooms on a pizza. I'm in sixth grade. He's in his early 20s. And watched The Cell with Jennifer Lopez.
Oh,
I don't know if you remember that movie.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that movie. That is not a movie you watch on mushrooms, not in sixth grade.
No, very poor idea. But that was my first introduction to psychedelics, and I felt complete with that. I never needed to return to that experience.
I don't need to do that again.
And so didn't touch another psychedelic until my late 20s. And part of actually what influenced not returning to psychedelics was my experience at the residential rehab, where I worked with a lot of clients that had substance-induced psychosis. Mm-hmm. And they were working with abusing...
Yep.
Non-intentionally abusing psychedelics, and also had a myriad of other variables, which need to be in place to induce a psychosis, you know, genetic predisposition or not, like your how well your sleeping matters, how well your hydrating matters, the quality of your relationships and your environment matters. And so they had, you know, the perfect formula to induce a psychosis, and were abusing certain psychedelics. So I kind of saw that also. I'm like, yeah, I'm still good. Don't really need to touch any psychedelics. I like the way that I'm filtering reality now. So I'll steer clear. And then had a friend in my late 20s that was just couldn't take her hands off a mushroom. She was just gobbling mushrooms and was having little bouts of psychotic breaks here and there. And I'm good. I don't think I need to go there. But had a transformation. When I turned 30, I left my ex-partner of 6 years that I was engaged to. I lost 60 pounds. I had a whole thing with like Catholicism versus spirituality, and was introduced to mindfulness and Buddhism. And then was feeling more called to psychedelic. There was a curiosity. I didn't even know then like what a calling was or wasn't. I describe it now as a calling, but then was just like, oh, it's just curiosity. I'm curious what's here. And so dropped acid at the Chinese New Year parade in San Francisco as my introduction. So that's a good idea.
Two major intros.
Dragons and fireworks and police and...
No pressure there.
You know, I needed to retreat to the house, and then spent the rest of the experience looking out. The Coit Tower Hill, where it just looked like a UFO. I'm like, this is really, really rad. And was enjoying my experience. And what came of that was my trust for myself. I was like, okay.
That's such a good point.
I still have my core self. Realized and tapped into like the strength of myself to navigate an experience like that, and felt like I still had me and didn't just completely lose myself and was totally out of control. And control's a whole other thing, but
big component.
Safety is what I gained from that experience. Like, okay, it's safe to explore these things and to venture off in my consciousness in these ways, and to explore the psyche, and I still have myself and feel safe doing so. So that was not the best way to introduce that, but it's how it happened. And I felt a lot of safety there. So then I began exploring with psilocybin, and knew that I wanted to take it up professionally also. So I was personally exploring and professionally seeking more education around it.
That's amazing. And it's like it encompasses every angle of being an experienced practitioner, right? You're like, not only do I have this experience of working with people that have had induced psychosis because of these variables, right? Or friends that are just doing it on their own, but my own experience, bad ones and good ones, right? Yes. Like, I've had this whole breadth of knowledge that I can bring to the table, talk about being a real lived person with a shared experience and being able to connect to the client. Like, you hit every container that there is to approach that topic and way of thinking about things, which I think that's awesome.
Recognizing that.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
It's an APP. That's one of our code of ethics, is having lived experience with the medicine that you're serving. Yeah. And know the territory. One of the questions I got all the time at the residential rehab, which is interesting, it keeps on coming up here. It feels so relevant for whatever reason, but maybe because we're talking about substances and drugs,
yeah,
and medicine, medicines also.
But, and we relate in that way. If yes, you've been through that, you know it real well.
They wanted to know if I had suffered from an addiction. You know, can you speak my language? And so I think of it similarly. It's like, have you been here?
Yeah.
Can you speak to this experience personally, not just textbook? Because that's education and knowledge, which is important, has a place, but really wisdom comes from lived experience.
Yep. People don't get it unless they've had that experience. I think that's one truth that I find to be consistent all the time, is that you won't really get it. You can think about it, you can conceptualize it, you can dig really deep into like textbooks and literature and research and stuff like that, but unless you've gone through it's like anything, though. It's like going through a divorce, it's like having a baby, it's like not being able to have a baby, it's like going through a breakup, or you know, having emotionally immature parents, or like you know, just
have
like
you
whatever.
Actually touched on that pain? Have you actually touched on the emotional landscape here?
Which is such a core component for professional development, right? Like when it goes back to saying that professionals, they say you want to be a blank slate, but I think that I find that most people find their path professionally when they're using their lived experience as part of the work that they're doing. Because if you've healed something and you know it's possible, and you've gone through a process with that, then you're going to be way more equipped to help others cope with the same journey.
My father has suffered from a methamphetamine addiction my whole life.
Wow.
Not a coincidence that I ended up working at a residential rehab. I wasn't consciously seeking that or wanting to work there when I got into psychology or any of my practicums, but
you never know in the beginning.
Universe would have it. Yeah.
Yeah. When people go out in their psychology path, they're like, I guess I want to do this. So, you know, I like to help people, and people say I'm good at helping people, and you know, that sounds nice, so I'm just going to do this. And then you never really know. Like, that's a big component of becoming a therapist, is figuring out like the path to professional, like what got you here in the first place and how has that evolved over time, which is why I really respect and appreciate you sharing your story, because it does capture that exact thing that so many practitioners, I think, don't get to have conversations with other practitioners about.
Right. Yeah. You know? Their background and their history.
Yeah. I was told, I remember being in my doctorate program, and they were like, well, heart surgeons don't have to go through heart surgery to perform heart surgery. And I've like, that always stuck with me. And I was always like, oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, but that's the standard. That's what we're using.
Okay, the like huge push to get mental health on par with the medical. And I'm like, I don't think I want to be on par with healthcare. No. I don't think it's going very well.
It's not. I don't think it's working. I mean, I think we have a sick care system, not a healthcare system.
Yes.
And, you know, talk about job security or keeping people sick. That's a revolving door. And one of the pushes also into psychedelic medicine was, I was working at Kaiser Permanente on the West Coast.
That's where Ken Jeong worked, right? The comedian?
I don't know.
He was a doctor. I'm pretty sure he was a doctor and worked there. Fun random fact.
You're just a factory worker on a factory line of mental health patients. Mm-hmm. And they call it the golden handcuffs because they pay you handsomely. And you feel handcuffed by the salary to keep on sacrificing your quality of life. I also, as a behavioral interventionalist, right, because I'm the mental health therapist, I'm doing talk therapy,
right,
was pushed to provide a pharmaceutical, or to explore a pharmaceutical. I didn't provide the pharmaceutical intervention, obviously, on my scope, but I was pushed during my intake to, like, you know, send to the psychiatrist and push the pharmaceutical intervention in some ways. And
two other scopes that are highly siloed, which I think is interesting, right? Like
the prescribing providers
versus, you know, non-prescribing, and like how that has been such a rigid pathway. And it's like mental health therapists, they touch upon it now. They're like, oh, take this class in substances, and then you learn about like 5 medications, you know, and then the rest of the world's like, have you heard of? And you're like, I don't know the contraindications of that. I don't know. Right. I don't know how it's like talking about hormones, right? Like, they talk about hormone replacement therapy these days, for example. And like, I was sitting with a room of colleagues the other day, and they were like all upset about HRT. And I was like, do you know anything about hormones? Mm-hmm. Were you educated in hormones? Were you educated in anatomy, biology, physiology? Mm-hmm. No,
because those things matter.
They matter.
They impact how you feel.
Yeah.
Because there's something going on at the neurotransmitters and the receptors.
Yeah, which is impacted by everything else in your life, too. It's like, it's impacted by what, like you were saying, what you eat, right? Like the medications that you are on. And like, if all these fields stay siloed like that, right? And then they're enticing you.
That's holistic. Yeah. Let's also just throw holistic on our marketing website.
Yeah. Let's just put the word out
our
there.
Our business cards, because it's trending. So we're holistic.
Yeah.
We don't talk to any of your other providers or know what's going on physically for you, but we're holistic.
Best hashtag.
Yeah.
But yeah. So let's jump over to the approach section, because I want to talk a little bit about like the science of psychedelics and like how it's different than just
my science.
We got some research to throw in the episode description we can play with. So. Nothing too crazy.
I mean, I've reviewed it I don't know how many times, but
it's not really the basis of the work.
Yeah,
the,
like the science.
Yeah.
Trust it.
All right, welcome to the approach segment. We're going to talk a little bit about the science. There's a lot of ways to talk about the science. I think one of the big, like, overarching themes in talking about the science is just, you know, is it good for you versus is it bad for you, right? And I like a lot of Dr. Daniel Amen's work, but he's a little skeptical on stuff like this. Like, he's like a brain health guy. Like, he's very into just like your brain and its health and what you can do to keep it healthy. So he referred to psychedelics as sort of like, because they call this the psychedelic renaissance now. Like, it's on the MAPS website, right?
Yeah, and I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
It's so interesting, the Renaissance. I had it described. This was described to me, which I've since taken on. But it's an ecosystem that's emerging, and to consider psychedelics, to call it a Renaissance, which sounds like such a short period in time, or to turn it into an industry, boxes to put psychedelics in a box feels really counterintuitive to what's actually wanting to emerge here. It's an ecosystem that has been around for a very long time, and you know, in our society and you know, what marketing and in the fields and how we just approach capitalism, if you will, just it's wanting to kind of put what's happening right now in a box by calling it a renaissance or calling it
wanting to package a field.
It's just so much bigger than that. So that comes up for me as I hear that, but please
proceed. And that's what's interesting, because I think the most like you think about putting things in a box, I think the best, this t-shirt, right? Like, you look at this t-shirt and you're like, oh, I know what that is. It's Jack Daniels, right? We have this conditioning about preconceived package ideas, right? Like, Jack Daniels is, you know, you can picture Jack Daniels himself. You can picture the cowboy hat. You can picture like the logo, and like it's related to Johnny Cash in Texas, and like all these things, right? It comes with this set of like words. And when we put stuff in boxes that way, right, it doesn't get to be a curious exploration, evolution of things. It doesn't get to be like the essence of what psychedelics, I think, is, is expansive, right? It's not restricting. Yeah. So when you think of like, I think the most common word associated with psychedelics outside of just the word psychedelics itself now is the idea of MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Society. I don't know.
Psychedelic studies.
I think. Yeah. Acronyms. But it's like, you look at stuff like that, and every time like the government or academia, right, with research, because research can only look at so much, it can only look at certain variables. So you wind up scaling down and shaving off different elements of things in service of trying to.
Yeah. So it's bite size.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah. Prove or disprove something, which is interesting about some of the research. And I threw a variety of research studies in there. Some of them are just about like the research grants. Like, they say that, you know, there's all these grants out there, but like there's really no government grants for psychedelics, I'm told, which is weird. That research article is in there. It's just it's a meta-analysis of like all the grants that do exist, which apparently is not many. I guess it's all privately funded.
Right. To study. Is that what you're saying?
Grants to study,
which is also blows my mind, right? Because what are we trying to figure out? What are we trying to figure out?
Yeah.
Are we trying to figure out if it works?
Yeah.
Because I think it works.
Yeah.
You save your money. There's other things you could go towards, but yeah, we need empirically validated.
Yeah.
You know, for our culture. And you know, again, I go back and forth. I'm a Gemini. I can play devil's advocate, get stuck in my head in these rabbit holes of like for and against and come up with all these different arguments.
That's great though.
We know that it works. So that's great. So what, why are we spending all of this money?
Because we don't like things that work. Because we know this.
We want to spend money to patent. We want to spend money to figure out how. Oh, I think of like the they're coming out with, they're trying to figure out how to isolate the psychedelic molecules. I don't know exactly which ones, but they're trying to take out the psychedelic part of psychedelics, right? Okay. And this is kind of like science, and this is empirically validated, and this is research, and this is laboratory stuff. And it's like, we're trying to isolate so much our science and our black and white and our research. We're stripping it of the actual thing.
To strip nature down to sell it.
Stripping it down to sell it. And, you know, the, to go on a tangent, you know, to the war on consciousness rages on, right? Mm-hmm. It's really those mystical experiences, per the studies, that provide some of this healing effect also. And the mystical experiences are that psychedelic thing that we're wanting to try and strip. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons. I don't know what the reason is, actually, but there's a lot of different, I'm sure, hypotheticals we can come up with around why they're wanting to do that. But
well, just at like a glance of the research that is out there, because I was trying to find something that actually said that it didn't work. Because I was like, what is, like, what's the counter argument, right? We talk about bad trips, right? Like, we talk about like those moments of breaking into psychosis, or like the things that have to come into place for somebody to have an induced psychosis from a substance, right? But when you look at the research, the broad majority, almost like 98 to 99% of the research, if you look at it, says that it works, right?
Yeah.
That it works for addiction, that it works for cancer treatment, that it works, like, if you look at Gabor Mate's work, right? Like, end of life.
Inquiry,
it's
effective, it works. And I think the research is valuable for contraindications. But even then, I can get in a slippery slope, because first of all, we're inviting in a bit of a psychosis. Like, we're, you know, you want some mental flexibility. You've got a depression, you've got anxiety, you've got this rigidity because you're taking on these labels, or because you're stuck in an anxious state or depressed state or whatever state you're stuck in.
That wiring, patterned wiring.
You want to rewire. And so you're welcoming in a bit of a break, right? From the pattern, from the traditional. And so it might look a little psychotic, like, you know, psychedelic. You're going to have hallucinations.
Yeah, you're exiting the matrix.
That's on the piece of paper that says there's a psychosis happening.
Breaking conditioning.
I just want to soften that a little bit where, we're kind of actually inviting a little bit of a psychotic break in, right? Because we're trying to shake things up and shake the snow globe, if you will.
Yeah.
So I just want to normalize that a little bit. Now, do we want to stay in that psychosis? That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
And how do you stay in that psychosis if it's for you? Yeah, a little bit to what I was speaking to earlier. There's a whole slew of things that would be in place in order to stay in that state. You know, genetic predispositions, knowing the contraindications. But also, some cultures admire that. Some cultures think that these are gifted individuals that present in the Western as having psychotic breaks.
Yep. It depends on the lens that you have, right?
Like, it depends on the lens.
Yep. And then who's to say, like, what lens is right or wrong? Because I think that's what people divert to, right? They're like, well, what's right and what's wrong? And it's like, well, it's just your lens. Like, it's that spheric 3D model. Like, Mike talked about that in his episode, right? He's like, it's not a spectrum, it's a sphere. My mind was blown. I was like, well, fuck.
I have to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think two, like, really important points, right, is that most people, when they start talking about psychedelics, is one is like, okay, if you have the experience, right, this is part of what I talk about my clients, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, please feel free to, is that if you want to be able to take the experience with you, right? Like, if you have this wonderful experience on psychedelics, right? Like, the idea is that you want to be able to embody those things for the in your life, not a psychosis, right? But just the flexibility of the insights.
Yeah, there's some, and it's very, I mean, just even with therapy, traditional talk therapy, I kind of relate it to the same thing. Like, you come into this hour long session, we have insights, there's epiphanies, it feels good, it's landing for you, it makes sense. And then you go back to your ordinary life and
take it with
you.
What
happened to it? Where'd it go? We're not integrating. So it's like, yes, integration is very important with psychedelics. It's important with anything that you do that you're wanting to
behavior change,
learn and make change around. You got to turn it into application. And so, yes, with psychedelics, there's other insights. Maybe it's a vision, maybe something, you got the code for something, or you got some download, and it's great for that psychedelic medicine experience during the ceremony. But what does it matter if you're not turning it into application and yeah. integrating it into your everyday life, how is it useful to you? Where do you get your money's worth? So,
and I imagine yes. that's where the abuse like line is that like, if you think that you can't integrate that experience beyond just the use of the substance, right? Like then you'd be like, well, I have to use the substance because I have to have this experience. Yeah. And then you get addicted.
Journey hoppers.
To yeah. Yeah. That's yeah. That, I didn't know that was a literal term.
I made it up. I feel like somebody else has said that. I don't think I made it up, but yeah, you get journey hoppers. We're coin it. Just want to. Just hop from journey to journey. And there is a bit of, you're high. Yeah. There is a bit of a high
yeah.
that happens, right? So there's some, I think people are seeking that high also.
Yep. And that experience that you described of trust, right? Being able to trust myself. I feel like that's the embodied piece of that, right? Mm-hmm. You're not doing this to avoid your life. You're not doing this to have such a unique and different experience that like you're doing it to distract yourself from your, from life. You're doing it to resource yourself, right? Yes. You're doing it to break that rigidity, which when it comes to the science, one thing that's really interesting about that, because like I try to explain this too to clients, and I was trying to explain to Mike the other day, that that wiring, like part of what's so detrimental about society and like Western culture is just the incessant repetition and almost hypnotic experience of like these social constructs, right? These, we don't realize we're getting downloaded with these beliefs, right? Mm-hmm. But what is paired together and repeats gets wired, right? Mm-hmm. What fires together wires together. It's like every practitioner's textbook ever. When you have that wiring just on repeat, it creates stronger and stronger and stronger wiring. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting about the research of psychedelics, because I was trying to come up with the word, I keep calling it a cascade, and essentially that's what it is. Mm. But when you look at the neurobiology, it creates what's called a neuronal avalanche. Hmm. And I was like, that's cool. That's a, I didn't know there was even a technical term for that. And essentially what it is this cascade that happens of neuroexcitation around your cortex that yeah. like creates all of this, you know, new wiring right. that is
neuroplasticity. Are you speaking to that?
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
same thing?
Same idea, yep. right? Because, well, I mean, and that's in essence what the neuroplasticity is that you're changing the firing of the neurons and the synapses in your brain. Yeah,
the capacity to rewire yeah. The neural pathways, which, you know, the neural pathways are the unhelpful or helpful thought patterns.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what really solidifies, concretizes behavior change.
Yeah. And it's so wild that I was like, oh, that's a cool term, like a neuronal avalanche. Neuronal
avalanche. Yeah. Yeah. I'm
a big fan of that. I like that. And because it just gives you like, it almost gives you like a visual representation of like what could happen when you're, it's almost like a pouring out of that rigidity, yeah, right?
Shaking
like,
up a snow globe.
Shaking up the snow avalanche, globe.
Get that snow shook around.
Yeah. I love it.
Because the well-walked trails are no longer in service, and so we need some new trails to walk yeah. and so
yep
you got to shake it up a little bit and find those new paths to create and
be which is possible if you look at if people look at depression and they think of like, oh, I want to take an antidepressant to fix my depression, right? And what they're saying is, I don't have enough serotonin and I don't have enough dopamine and I want to boost that serotonin, I want to boost that dopamine, then why wouldn't you be able to have flexibility, like neuronal, because mm-hmm. that's what you're saying, right? When you're saying I'm going to take an antidepressant to feel better, you're saying that you accept the fact and you acknowledge mm-hmm. that you have plasticity,
right?
Right, like that's essentially like at the core yeah. of what people are saying. And
yeah, pills are so interesting because also, I mean, when we're taking prescription pills, we're just taking the prescription pill hoping yeah. that solves all our problems.
Right.
And yes, there is, you know, the neurochemistry around it and just naturally with the serotonin and the dopamine and all the receptors and the default mode network, like there is a bit of a antidepressant effect mm-hmm. neurochemically, but more so the neuroplasticity requires work. And so when we're just taking yeah. prescription pills,
that's just like Hail Mary,
it make me feel better. You know, that's all I need to do, right? To feel yeah. better is just take this pill.
Change but my mood right now.
There's no
now.
Work that I have to do.
Right.
Because, you know, society, I think, prefers it that way. We don't really want to do the work.
Yeah.
And so I think the psychedelics also just amplify where the work needs to be done. And then it's up to you to go do the work, not just take the pill if you really want. Yep.
Which is the thing that change. Creates the depression and anxiety in the first place is people right. avoidance of doing the work. Lack right? of
willpower.
Yeah no just like do willpower. It for me. Right. But when you take action, you take agency and you have control, or not even control, but just agency, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you take those steps, then yes. you're like, oh.
Yeah, right? I'm capable. Yeah. I'm powerful. Yeah. I can think differently about myself. I can create change if I want. Yeah, responsibility. You can take personal responsibility. Yeah. I also, I mean, it's very like scientific. Yes, I think we're in the scientific portion of the program right now called Approach.
Yeah.
Approach.
Yeah.
But there is a bit of like spirituality component to it also that, you know, is not scientific, that is responsible, I think, for a lot of change too. And that's been interesting to navigate as a therapist, which relies on empirically validated treatments and you know, spirituality. Is it measured? I mean, we've got mystical questionnaires to try and measure things, but it's non-measurable and a huge component to wellness and improvement and change. And I really, really love weaving that into my work, and is also why APP exists, to help kind of normalize and make that more of a mainstay.
Which is so important. Like, it's interesting. Like, you're like, is it the scientific part, right? Like, so I refer to this part of the segment as educational part, but like, it doesn't have to be a scientific imperative. Like, I want people to think about what research means.
Right.
Right. And that's exactly what you're saying, right? Like,
yeah,
there are components to this. There's components to wellness and well-being and health, like, that you can't boil down into a scientific study. So if you're only looking at evidence-based, empirically based things, right, then you're missing a large part of a broader scope, a broader picture that is probably taking up a larger portion of the human experience and human existence and what it means to heal or be embodied or be alive or thrive in your life.
And can we go do our own research? It's one of the things I love about my mic. You're also very nice, Mike. One of the things I love about
thank you so much.
You're welcome. I know you're waiting for that. Make all your dreams come true.
Yep, means the feedback. It's a mic thing.
Nice. Mic thing. He researches for himself. He's the test subject, which sometimes I'm like, maybe I don't want you to test that out and find out for yourself. You know, like, I kind of like you how you are. Let's not get the answer to that. But he's the test subject and does the research and the experimenter and finds out for himself, which I also really, you know, like, there's something about not externalizing our power and our authority and our determinations and our judgments and bases and like figuring it out for yourself. I mean, within reason, of course, and, you know, there's other things here, but in general, like, just find out for yourself,
you and know, not from this? The basis of like trying to fix yourself. Like, he's not doing that because he thinks something's wrong with him that needs to change. He's doing it because he's naturally curious, right?
That's right.
Mike, for the record, Mike Bledsoe was on a prior episode. You can go and check that out. Maybe I'll just link it in the episode description, and you can get to know Ashley and Mike.
Yes, partner.
Yeah, but it's not from a place of needing to fix.
No, there's no deficit.
Yep.
You know, and that's. It's optimizing, it's potentiating.
Yep. And I found that to be true, and I mean, I'm sure you have too, just in addictions work, is that self-sabotaging behavior, right? Like, you're not your behaviors, but that self-sabotaging abusive behavior comes from the belief that you do have a deficit, right? It comes from the belief that you aren't enough, and that there's a concept of even being enough that we should live up to, right? Like, there's this deep-rooted sense of like missing something, and you're trying to fill it or numb out the feeling of missing something. And it's like, no, if you can be curious, right? You can explore things in your own life. And I think that's a great opportunity to switch over to The Road Back, where we can talk about ways to engage with this work in your own life. Welcome to The Road Back. We're going to keep it short because we've been talking for a while. Yeah. it's our adventure music. We start with some curious music and then we like go into like, all right, take some agency.
I'm nervous.
Go on your journey. I love what you've done with APP, just because I'm super passionate about practitioners having a sense of community, resources to tap into, places to learn, places to turn to. I'm going to drop the website in the episode description. The website's beautiful. It's phenomenal. It encompasses everything you've talked about. It encompasses the code of ethics, each different type of psychedelic, and then mixed medicine models. And like, there's so many cool things on there. So I highly recommend that you go explore the APP website, alteredpractitioners.com, correct?
Yes, alteredpractitioners.com.
So what, in your opinion, you've built this beautiful thing. How do people start to engage on this journey if they're curious about psychedelics, because I've tried to look up resources just as a general, like, you know, citizen looking up resources, and there's not that many. Like, it's hard to find
places to start. It's really land dependent. It depends on where you're, what land you're standing on as you're seeking. You're talking from a client's perspective, right? Because the APP is tailored to the psychedelic practitioners, the facilitators of the psychedelics. But if you are a seeker, a journeyer, an explorer looking to get into psychedelics, yes, it really does matter if it's a scheduled substance or not, where you're at, what your accessibility is. Mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to, is accessibility. Do you have accessibility?
Yeah.
To these medicines.
And safety, right?
Yeah. Yes. And safety. I mean, you want to have access to education also, which I believe is the way, is more than just having a ton of education, so that we know about dosing and we know about who shouldn't be taking it. We know about the contraindications with medications. If we're on SSRIs or MAOIs, that stuff does matter.
Yes.
Do I need a sitter or a guide or a therapist? I mean, there's so many different things to educate around when it comes to psychedelics. You know, I guess legally, like, the low-hanging PC answer is find a clinical trial near you if you want to explore legally and you're seeking for mental health. You know, if you feel pretty stable in your mental health and you have access, then, you know, find some education on dosing and start small. Mm-hmm. If you're really seeking because there's some mental health that you're wanting to work on, it probably, you know, could be smart having at least a sitter, maybe a guide or a therapist, just depending, again, on what you have access to, or an administrator, even, is what they're called in Oregon. They're not therapists, they're administrators, and all their backgrounds vary. Yeah, I don't know if that really answers your question, but it's hard to answer, just needing more context.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to answer the question. I think it's a great start for people, because it's so funny, because, like, when you're deeply involved in this work, it's like, it's all right, where would I start? I don't remember where I would start. Right? Yeah. Like, I don't, like, but I think that sounds like perfect, you know, advice or a direction for people, because I know there's a lot of places here in Austin that are popping up. Kuya is one of them, Aluma. Mm-hmm. Roots Behavioral Health, they all do some sort of
there's ketamine, right? So ketamine is legal,
yep,
for treatment, and it's a dissociative. Debate is out about it being a psychedelic. It alters your state, so it's a psychedelic, and that's a good place to start. And I you know, depends on the clinic that you go to. Technically, again, medical necessity, there's some medical necessity in order to receive a treatment, but there's also clinics that will treat you if you're just wanting to explore, potentiate, optimize your experience.
I feel like it's a little bit of, like, still going, like going to any doctor too, which I think people are not very well versed in terms of, like, how do I talk to a medical professional? Like, I don't know what questions to ask. Mm-hmm. And I know that I've heard some horror stories about people that don't, they say they do integrative work, but they don't. They have people, you know, dosed with these medications and then they just leave them alone. And it's like, no, if you're going to, that's not an ethical way to function. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to seek out, like, a practitioner or administrator or anything, right? Like, to know what kind of questions that you might ask them and what sort of, like, what to look for in terms of getting started. Because
the is very much an underground. I mean, we're talking about, like, the above ground, and practitioners are licensed or qualified or have done whatever to sit in front of you to call themselves, however they're framing or labeling themselves. But then there also is very much, like, an underground market where it is not governed, and there aren't any qualifications, there aren't any requirements, certifications, or criteria that you need to meet in order to serve and provide that service. And so that's when it becomes even more important to ask the right questions. And how long have you been serving this for? What's your personal experience? Yeah. Well, what happens if things do go awry? What can I expect after? How do you work before and after, especially with psychedelics? What's your energetic hygiene? Do you have any traditions or rituals?
Yeah.
Is this a ceremony or is this, like, therapy? How would that practitioner, are they going to work with you? Are they a coach?
Yeah.
Are they a therapist? What makes them a therapist? There's some people that call themselves therapists, psychedelic therapists now, that aren't actually licensed therapists.
Yeah.
So it could get, you know, when we're in this uncharted, Wild Wild West is so watered down, but we're in this uncharted territory. There's a lot of, I guess charlatan would be the right word to use there. I don't use that very often, but people that'll pop up and just, you know, want to take your money.
And being very clear with people, like, when, after you found the right person to work with, being very clear with people about what's going on for you biologically, right? Like taking inventory of like,
yeah,
how do I treat my body? What do I eat? What do I ingest? Like things like that. Because I imagine that all of those chemical compounds interact. Like you said, like SSRIs, if I'm on an antidepressant, don't just go.
Am I moving?
Yeah.
Am I going through divorce? What are my stress levels like?
Yeah. I mean, what's the state of my mind? And like being honest with these people about where you're at. And that's again, why you would want to know what kind of professional you're working with.
Hopefully they have a sound intake.
Yeah.
And they're also running you through a process.
Yes.
Exploring these things, which again could be a bit cultural. Here we go, devil's advocate, because you know, in Peru or in these jungles, do they have like a full-blown intake for you and they want your family history and your social history and your medications and your supplements? And
no, they're just, you know, like, get in the tent.
Not. They're like, more medicine.
Yeah.
You know, is what you need, which I'm not judging and saying is good or bad. So it really there's like a cultural perspective, but here we have the opportunity to, you know, we know these things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's better to be more prepared on the front end than not.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful for practitioners and clients alike. Mm-hmm. So do you have anything coming up going on with Altered Practitioners? Do you have any workshops, any...
We have some groups opening up. We really are geared towards the psychedelic practitioner. We just started having medicine-specific groups. So when we first started about a year and a half ago, we had I just let the universe like support what the group should look like, the constellation of the group. And so we had a bunch of practitioners that are working with different medicines, mixed medicine groups. And we recently started medicine-specific groups. So we have a ketamine group coming up. And nice. So... ketamine is legal, as we just discussed, and there's a lot of therapists which are clinically trained and very well versed in the intellectual and the cognitive, and I love that. That's one of our groups that we're offering right now because it's such a great opportunity to blend them in this intersection with the more shamanic, earth-based, ancestral practitioner, which is a completely different perspective and approach to the work and blending in that sort of a group. So we have a ketamine-specific group coming up. Next month, we'll have a psilocybin-specific group for psilocybin practitioners. Cool. We just started a cannabis and salvia group, which is wild. There's really not the practitioner that's running the group works with both cannabis and salvia. But other than that, you know, there's really no, like, are they brother, sister? I'm not I'm not an expert on these plants to say, but, that is one group that we have right now is cannabis salvia. So, and I look forward to having more, medicine specific groups, more medicines come online.
Well, and if you are a practitioner and you need that diagnostic lens as a pathway into this, I do have some research that I'm dropping in the episode description that does talk about the impact and collaboration combination of like a DBT, CBT, mm-hmm. ACT, things like that. Mm-hmm. So it does show in the research that these things are, if not an adjunct, a remedy in conjunction with those modalities that you might already be trained in. So you
IFS is huge.
IFS, yep. There's a lot of research around the evidence-based practices that already exist for mental health practitioners in collaboration with psychedelic use. So.
Yes, and the tricky part is just knowing what program's the right program, what's actually going to be recognized, because it doesn't really exist right now. The governing boards are still being figured out, and so what does it actually mean? What do I need to be licensed? So who, we don't know yet. But there is a lot of good, nonetheless, a lot of good, regardless of what may or may not be recognized, a lot of good education that complements the psychedelic space.
There's a place to start.
And not just these empirically validated therapies or orientations, but also other spiritual practices and traditional native indigenous practices too that support if you have the wonderful, amazing opportunity to be able to study or apprentice under one of those.
Yeah, that's it's amazing. I love the work that you do, and I love that you have created this space. And I'm glad that you gave up your practice to do this.
Here I am. We'll see. I'll keep you posted.
That's great.
Working out so far. It really is my heart's work.
Yep. And I love. And you know, it's funny because people always talk about like, you know, finding your purpose and finding your passion. And I think we think of it as being this like grand strike of lightning, but it really isn't, right? It comes in this small, curious way. And you're like, if you notice like what you have the proclivity toward, right, and you follow those lights that light up the path along the way, you really
do.
Follow
the curiosity.
Yeah, you line up, right?
And I followed the momentum. These groups started in my living room because I needed community.
Yeah.
And then there was a demand for another group, and then a demand for online groups, and then a demand for a website. And so I'm just really trying to listen and not think and just feel into the knowing and the intuition and trusting, a lot of trust and surrender in this in trusting, you know, what I'm doing. And I really 100% believe in it. So I trust that. And I'm in service.
I love it.
I'm in service. I'm just doing what's being asked of me.
That's such badass work. Thank you. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Yes, I really appreciate it. This is Ashley Carmen. We'll be dropping all of her information in the episode description, so you can go check her out on your own. And we'll see you next time.
Awesome. Thank you.
If you're having a mental health emergency, we urge you to dial the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255 or text the Crisis Text Line. Text HOME to 741-741.